I hope nobody hurts on this episode of 90s Tunes with Avery and Lena. But more importantly, not only is it Avery and Lena or Lena and Avery, we also have Vanda and Frank. Thanks for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having us.
No problem. Excited to be here.
Awesome. It's great to have you guys. Vanda, you were on our previous podcast, the Mess Hall podcast.
And you were on my previous podcast, Tight Ends podcast.
Which was awesome. I finally got the reference of your opening line because of Friday Night Lights. I never watched that show, but
from
then
my previous podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I saw that reference the other day and I'm like, oh, that's where it comes from. So thanks for being on. And of course, Lena's here too. We don't really care too much about her. And
I guess not.
The research queen. I kneel at the altar. You know.
Not today. There was too much research. I was overwhelmed and I just kind of kept it.
I tried to make you proud.
I just read Wikipedia. Just so you know, it's Wikipedia I read. So take the facts knowing that.
Yeah, so we are doing REM, Automatic for the People. So when I reached out to you, Vanda, not so much Frank, I don't have your number. So, but how did you two come up with this album? Why did you want to do this one?
I think this album actually brings back a lot of memories for us. Basically, we lived this album when we were dating and when we got engaged. Stirs up a lot of memories. And there's a couple of songs actually that mean a lot to us. And we have some good stories about this album.
Nice.
The early 90s is us. We kind of just got out of high school and we were moving toward like marriage. You know what I mean? So it's that in between time and, well, we can get into it, but the angst of Michael Stipe's voice and REM in general was just like, I think we were the perfect age for this album kind of when it came out, if that makes sense.
Right.
And not to mention, they were my favorite band at the time.
That Avery? They have similar tastes in music. We had like two CDs the same.
Oh, when we got married and Frank moved in with me, we kind of did the like cassette tape CDs, collection. Yeah. Some CDs, I had way more cassette tapes. I don't know. Maybe I was still pretty old school. But we were comparing things and we just had duplicates of almost everything. And he was the guy who had a Split Ends album. I mean, if you guys ever want to go there. And I had a previous boyfriend who made fun of me for buying Split Ends. And then this guy, you know, had the Split Ends album. I was like, this is meant to be. So
there you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you both have this album or was one of you more of an influence on the other one?
Oh, definitely Frank. Frank is the REM fan.
I remember the opening track of Automatic for the People because I was a fan right from the Green album. I used to listen to it in high school. But then I went back in their catalog, obviously, to other things before that. And then at a time, I really liked, obviously, that album was gigantic. But when the first song came out, Drive, before the album came on, I would listen to the radio. And you probably, I don't know if you ever known people to do this, but us old people, what we used to do is we couldn't just download it. So we'd have to basically wait till they played on the radio and then we'd put a tape in and we'd press the record and we tried to get the best copy we could. And then we would just listen to it. So this is one of those songs.
You cut out the announcer who might still be talking over
there. Yeah. You have to time it perfectly because you didn't have the editing tools. You just had a cassette that you'd have to press the two buttons to play in the record to start recording it. So.
I used to find if it was a big song, like a countdown, my station had 9 at 9. And so you would know it might be a song might be on at that like point. So you wouldn't have to wait all day.
Yes, but...
And then Much Music Canada was huge. And so I recorded a lot of videos. So a lot of my music was actually on video cassettes rather than cassettes, I would say. Yeah, Much Music Canada was a huge influence.
So Betamax or VHS or?
VHS. Betamax is the better quality, but VHS just took off and my dad taught video production and so we're pretty into
Nice.
So editing came naturally. I always got the start of the song.
Nice. So you guys big fans of REM. Have you ever seen them live?
Yes, we've seen them.
We were trying to count how many times.
I think it was four.
Four or five.
Four or five.
Nice.
One of them is very special.
Well, we'll get to it when we get to the song. But yeah.
Okay. Shall we dive into some history of REM? I know both of you, it's almost going to be like a research off here.
Who's Rocky and who's Apollo Creed?
I just kind of, there was a lot, but Michael Stipe and Peter Buck met in an Athens, Georgia record store where Buck worked, and they would just kind of talk about music. They had the same tastes. And then they through a mutual friend, met Bill Berry and Mike Mills, who played music together. They were in university, and they were formed in 1980. Is that right?
Athens, Georgia.
Yeah. I'm guessing you know how they got their name. I'm just looking at you, Panda.
No.
No? Oh. Just randomly opened dictionary, pointed at REM. There were some other names before that, but that's how they decided on this one.
Yeah.
I mean, they were together till 97, I think, until one of the guys got sick.
Bill Berry got, had a tumor. I think he was sick. So then he left the band, and then it took a couple albums for them to kind of find their way. A lot of fans feel that they were never the same after that. But they did actually have some albums that, if you revisit them today, were actually really good.
It was just hard to ever get that out of time, that, you know, Losing My Religion, to grasp that again. That can destroy a lot of bands, but, like, we'll talk about Automatic for the People, is, I think, their best album. And they absolutely were able to come back from that massive hit of Losing My Religion that really could have really killed a lot of other bands, but they kind of came back. The album name refers to the motto of an Athens, Georgia-based eatery, Weaver D's Delicious Fine Foods. And I guess Automatic for the People was like their little tagline. Michael Stipe is an artist in kind of almost every sense. He had photographed that star that's on the album. Yeah. It was part of a sign for Sinbad Motel in Miami. And so they were going to call the album Star. And they just kind of, I don't know how they came, you know, how those things happen. Yeah. Who knows in a group of people, but the photo just kind of stuck, and then they went with that for the album cover. So
I guess fans would go to the restaurant looking for the star, and they're like, no, that's not here.
Yeah.
That would be, I guess, kind of disappointing. Or two trips.
Yeah. Is that restaurant still around?
Yeah.
Nice.
Michael Stipe and a lawyer approached the owner. He had been robbed the night before, and he approached them, and he was in a bad mood, and they asked if he could use Automatic for the People and put him in a good mood. Like, it was odd for him to be grumpy, but he was all for it.
Oh, good.
Which, yeah.
So it was like a good thing. So this album for me, if you know how sometimes when you're feeling down, maybe kind of depressed, and you want an album that, like, is going to be happy and lift you out of that, this is not that album.
If I need a good cry, Everybody Hurts was the first song on my list.
If you are feeling down, kind of depressed, and you want to wallow in it and really just swim in that for a while, swim. That'll come up a little later. This is the album for you. So, yeah, it's, I think that when you want to listen to it will affect whether your enjoyment of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Although I don't think they're all very depressing songs, but there are some that they kind of like ups and downs, but there are some songs. Yeah. I put it in, like I said, if I need a cry, Everybody Hurts.
Yeah. Their songwriting, the way they write songs together as a band was that Peter Buck, Mike Mills, Bill Berry would do the music. Then they would hand that music over to Michael Stipe. He would write the lyrics. So it's a very, for the most part, we'll talk about a little change to that, but that's pretty much how they wrote music, is they would write it, hand it off to Michael Stipe, who would write the lyrics, and he would have pages of sort of possible lyrics and things. But I think they do it very separately.
Yeah, that's kind of funny, but it works. It works for them.
Yeah.
Well, I know sometimes, like, Peter Buck would give music over to Michael Stipe and say, this is an important song, right? So, like, take it seriously. Because, you know, from what I, you know, if, I don't know if you've ever seen them live, but Michael Stipe, he is very much, I think he's got problems with ADD. So, At times they have to get him to focus. If you know ever seen them live, like he has a music stand with the lyrics, because he has trouble remembering lyrics and remembering music. So I think, you know, they have to get him to focus. And Peter Buck say, this is an important sheet of music. You have to take it seriously, right? Almost like a little kid.
So who wrote the lyrics?
It's Michael Stipe.
Okay. So
music is all the band. Lyrics are all him.
Okay. So probably drawing a lot of inspiration from the music and then putting his own
words and
over
I think
it kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think he comes across things or thinks up things and would write things in his a notebook and then wait for the music to kind of fit that. Or sometimes what we'll talk about later, but he would listen to them and then the lyrics would come to him. So he was the guy. Mm-hmm. Do you want to start out track by track-ish?
Sure.
Let's drive into this.
Well, to start with that first 3 seconds, iconic. You're in the album. 3 seconds, you're in, and you're in that mood, I think. It's very, it sets it up. Like, I hadn't heard it for years, but as soon as I played that, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember this album 100% now.
Yeah.
Within seconds.
Yeah, the drive was really, I just loved, as soon as you heard it, you're like captivated and you want to hear the rest of the song. Now, it does take inspiration from an older song called Rock On. So you can, if you ever listen to a song called, I can't remember who was saying it, but Rock On was kind of the inspiration for it. The video is one of my favorite videos of all time. Look at it, because if you look at how the band was at that time, they just achieved success. And if you actually see the video, at first you think it's just, you know, but there's a lot of symbolism in that video. You watch it. I will encourage everybody to watch that video.
Okay. I didn't watch any of the music videos from this, but I listened to the CD like a bunch.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't watch the video, but I did read that Adam Scott from Parks and Recreation was in it. He was an extra in it.
Oh, he was an extra. Because you won't tell, besides the band, you won't tell who else is in it.
Yeah, okay. Some extra in the back.
Mike Mills said Drive is telling kids to take charge of their own lives. Among other things, to Peter Buck said, it's a subtle political thing. There's quite often a bit of a political undertone in a lot of their songs. Mm-hmm. We like to think you can appreciate these songs on any level that you want to. And that was definitely when I first heard it, certainly as a kid, what I would consider a kid. Yeah, you don't necessarily see it that way, just kind of more what it feels like to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, as an aside, it's the first song that Stipe wrote on a computer. Which has nothing to do with anything. I'm not like, wow, it sounds like he wrote this on a computer. Not music, like the lyrics. But yeah. And did you remember this song? Do you remember this album, Abe?
I remember some of the songs off this album because I think they were popular, but I don't think I've listened to this whole album before researching for this podcast.
Oh, okay. And I'm not sure if I owned it or just borrowed it a lot from my best friend who became my roommate after a while, so I knew it well. A little bit of both.
Where do you think is the best place to listen to this? Like, you know, there's like house cleaning albums, and then there's like road trip albums, and then there's like,
this is sitting down with headphones with candles and just kind of by yourself, cup of tea. That's what I think.
Like all albums, I listen to it usually while playing video games.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the right fitting?
No, it wasn't really a good video game album, just because, just trying to get stuff done on a video game and just thinking about, like, everybody hurts. And
yeah.
It's not an uplifting video game album, but I just found I'd listen to it around the house. Like, this morning I listened to it while in shower and then getting ready. And so I didn't have a problem with it as a getting ready kind of album, which was nice.
So for me specifically, this would be the album I put on when we're on a road trip and I'm take over the driving. Frank usually drives. And Frank is sort of going to have a sleep while we're driving. This album wouldn't put me to sleep personally. Like, it's not like, I think there's a bit too much angst and something in
things
it
to make you think and not settle you,
but you don't want anything too loud, like you know, you can't be blasting, you know, since you've been gone, Kelly Clarkson or anything while someone's trying to sleep. So that's a pretty specific place for the album, but there, that's it for me.
I can see that. And for you, Frank, sleeping in the car and not listening.
I've listened to this album so many times that I think just because I have I now have the vinyl for it. I just got the vinyl last year, so I just like to put it on and just listen to it when, you know, you're just sitting down and doing it. Like, you really can listen to this album anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good puzzle, like doing a puzzle album
Oh, yeah. That's great, actually, yeah.
You say it's not good in video games. I'm going to make a segue here. What do you mean? Like, number two, Try Not to Breathe, about grandma Stipe's grandmother dying. You don't want to hear like that while playing video games or like dancing around the house.
No.
My notes for Try Not to Breathe are, it's about Stipe's grandmother dying, Mike Mills backing vocals, ! Mike Mills backing vocals are like the spine of the band, I would say, in a sense. And in this song, when you like in headphones, I can't even Michael Stipe's vocals are incredible. And then Mike Mills comes in with that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm at a loss for words, which is not like me, Avery.
So as an REM fan, this is probably one of the most underrated songs. Like, to me, this one should have been released instead of Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight. Because I like, because Sidewinder Sleeps, they released a single. But I think Try Not to Breathe has that urgency, that backing vocal by Mike Mills that just is such a beautiful song about death. Now, I don't know if there is such a thing, but it's such a beautiful song that I just love this song.
Thanks. It makes me, and this doesn't correlate to anyone listening, want to sway like back and forth like this.
Great visual for an audio podcast.
Eyes closed, just swaying like this with not the smile on my face, though. But only because I'm like showing you guys how I listen to this song. And now you bring up the Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight. Didn't know what a Sidewinder was till I looked it up yesterday. But I always loved The Lion Sleeps Tonight. That was one of my favorite songs when I was little.
Yeah.
And I liked that it wasn't just me who thought that it was like sounded similar, like the name.
No, it is taken. Yeah. The band admits that they were inspired by that song when they were writing that. Yeah.
And I'd say in that song, I had to look up the lyrics because sometimes I just make things up and sing them for decades
100%.
Long, and I don't want to know.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's points when he says, call me when you try to wake her up, because I don't know what I sang. That it almost sounds like he's like giggling in the middle, or like a little almost like he wants to laugh. Did anyone else hear that, or is that just my...
Well, he actually does the laugh after the third verse. He could not pronounce the name Dr. Seuss correctly.
Oh.
He calls him Dr. Zeus, and he called him... They kept trying to record it, I guess. The band was getting frustrated that Michael could not say Seuss and kept saying Zeus. So when he finally kind of almost got it, because even if you listen to it now, it sounds like Zeus. He does that laugh, right? And they left that in the recording, which I think is kind of cool. They did say that they put this song on a bit of a lighter song in among all of this, like we keep talking about darkness and angst.
Yeah.
They thought they probably overcorrected a bit because it's a pretty like upbeat, funny kind of song. But yeah, they left in that laugh in there. So yeah, if you listen to it, you can hear Zeus.
In his defense, that's not how you say Dr. Seuss. It's actually like sus, but so many people said it wrong that he was like, okay, let's go with it. Yeah, I listened to a podcast about him a while ago. And he just like, okay, that sounds okay. Everyone was saying it. So maybe,
if you can cash the check, call me whatever you want,
So Michael Stipe, that's okay. Oh, I thought you were going to add something. That's why I looked at you.
No, I have nothing to add.
And now I think we're at the one of the biggest songs.
Yeah.
Everybody Hurts.
Yeah.
I like how you said it was one of the biggest, but I was looking up chart performances of some of the singles.
Yeah.
And actually this was not the highest charting song on the album.
Was it Man on the Moon?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Like at the time charting, or like I think since the movie that...
I'm surprised that it didn't re-chart.
Yeah, that's
with the movie,
what I'm gonna say.
But I think the movie was out right before, like, say, Spotify or any of those other streaming services took off. So I think if that movie was released today, the song would be...
They wrote another song for the movie.
Yes.
Yeah. R.E.M. did. They wrote a different song for the movie. Yeah.
But...
Because of their connection to Andy Kaufman.
Mm.
Yeah.
So Drive actually charted higher than Everybody Hurts.
In the U.S. or worldwide?
In Canada.
In Canada. Good.
Yes.
We're Canadian.
I'm proud of you.
And that
so
was
proud of
that
you.
Was because I taped it. And as soon as it came out, I was like, I gotta have that. That was my one of my favorite REM songs for a long time was Drive. But I will say Everybody Hurts is such a beautiful song, but I think it suffers from the same problem that Losing My Religion suffered.
Yeah.
That it played too much in radio.
Okay, yeah.
And it's and both of those songs are such good songs, but they're not my favorite songs because I was so sick of hearing them, right?
Yeah, I have that with song. Oh, yeah.
Because they played it all the time. Both of those songs were played all the time.
The lyrics are atypically straightforward, Peter Buck said, because it's aimed at teenagers. They were concerned about the prevalence of suicide among teenagers. Mm. And this is their song to teenagers, basically saying to hold on. I'll just drop in here. Avery, if you don't mind, 988 is the Canadian and American Suicide Crisis Helpline. Just anytime you talk about suicide, you kind of like to mention the help available. We're further ahead than we were when this album came out in terms of crisis help. So 988 is our Canadian number. Anyway, Peter Buck, this was kind of funny. He said, I've never watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but the idea that high school is a portal to hell seemed pretty realistic to me. So this song was like they understood this problems that these teenagers were going through and kind of were reaching out to them like, hey, you kind of get past it. You will hold on. Everybody hurts. But I laughed at that because I thought that's pretty much it. You really couldn't pay me to go back to high school.
No. In the film Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which features Canadian Donald Sutherland. That is my Canadian connection.
Oh, nice.
I actually have two. Do you have one for this song? I thought we might have the same.
For the song? No, I have one for the album.
The video was also directed by Jason Scott, who did videos for Katie Lang and Odds.
Nice.
Not the Odds. We learned. Just had to throw those in there. See?
Shall we all throw out our Canadian connections then?
Whoever has one.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mine is where they recorded a demo. You?
Oh, at Kingsway Studios?
Yes.
In New Orleans?
Daniel Lanois, yeah, studios.
Yeah, that's what I had for
Daniel Lanois, of course, a Canadian musician and producer. Yeah.
Which we saw live one time.
Oh.
We did see Daniel Lanois live, which was...
Which is odd.
And in the States.
It was, what was it at Coachella or was it...
No, I feel like that one was in Austin, Texas.
Austin. Nice. Yeah, like we never really were looking, and then was like, "Hey, Daniel Lanois."
City Lights Festival, Austin City Lights Festival.
Yeah. Ooh, nice.
And so we went and watched the set because we had to watch a fellow Canadian.
Where'd I go? We have to go. Yeah. It was great.
And such a famous Canadian, who's known for his producing, right? So
yeah, and produce a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
Did you have another Canadian? Or
No, that's the only Canadian connection I had.
I'm going to just backtrack a little. Also, Michael Stipe kind of wrote this thinking Patti Smyth might do the backup lyrics, but it didn't work out. But she did a cover of it on a CD in the future. Yeah.
Also sang backup for in an album later on, a song called Debo the Letter. She was the backing. Yeah,
oh, I didn't realize that.
Nice.
The show Big Mouth, which is that cartoon about teenagers. they did basically a ripoff of the song when one of the characters gets her period called Everybody Bleeds.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it's sung by a singing tampon, which looks strangely like Michael Stipe.
I did see that episode. I've only seen a few episodes, but I remember that one, but forgot that part.
Yes. So anyway. Check that out.
List of things to do. Singing tampon.
I don't think I actually have track singing by track everything here. Like I don't have every track, I'll be honest, but
I do, don't worry.
Oh, you do. Okay.
Whether I have anything to say. Next one, New Orleans instrumental number one. It's an instrumental and it's nice.
I feel that kind of gives a little bit of break.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of breaks the album up. I find like there's like basically a couple of breaks in this album, but that kind of, you know, after you have the momentum of the first four songs that are all good songs. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of breaks it and just kind of gives you a little breath, right?
I didn't want that break. Once I got a little bit into the song, I just skipped it right to the next song.
Oh, okay.
Huh.
After the first couple listens. This morning when I was listening, I skipped it.
Okay.
And one thing we didn't mention, and I think it was on this song, but John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin did a lot of instrumental, or a lot of the string.
Right, yes.
Music, that's not the right way to put it.
Yeah.
On this album, a lot of songs. I don't know if this was one, but I believe he added to it. I can't think, but.
No, it wasn't this.
Oh, so I was wrong, but wrong time to bring him up, but oh well. Next is Sweetness Follows. Mm-hmm. I didn't write anything about that song. Just like I hadn't. It was good, but
yeah. No, I there's really not a bad song in here.
No,
that one was kind of one that's why I like the break, because if everybody hurts, Sweetness Follows, which if you probably put them together, you probably will become very sad.
Yeah. Some kind of think Michael Stipe is being sort of critical of religion here, which is kind of a theme in some of his lyrics, where he's like saying, you know, this promise of a sweet kind of hereafter, as if, well, then why aren't we all just looking for that? I never heard that in it. My dad passed away in December, so here, this is kind of the first time I've heard the song since then, and it, like, to me, I found it comforting. So Michael Stipe might have, he didn't work on me, let's just say that. Because you do want to think that there's something that can follow the pangs of death, and that, you know, there's something sweet about it. And so anyways, it kind of brought a little tear to my eye, and I was like, sorry, Mr. Stipe.
She waved her finger. Nobody could see, but she waved her finger at him.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's necessarily true, but that's kind of people try to get meanings, of course, out of it. But
nice. So before we go on to the next song, and since I wasn't fancy enough to have a automatic flipping tape player, I'll go flip the tape over to side B on this one, or flip the record.
Okay.
And Monty got a raw deal.
So that one, I feel sometimes it's like the song itself is not a bad song, but I feel it's kind of misplaced with the other ones, in my opinion. I feel that this song is kind of misplaced in this album, even though it's not a bad song. I just feel like with the other songs, like it's, I don't know. It just kind of feels misplaced for me.
I literally have no notes. I grew up with a guy named Monty.
Oh, there you go.
Well, this was Canadian, I assume?
Yes.
That's another Canadian.
So this is Monty Hall, from Let's Get Let's Make a Deal. If you look into his life, not that I know him well, but it's actually...
You don't know Monty Hall well? No.
Not like he's my best, but Monty Hall had a very different life than what you've seen, right? Oh, so this is in regard to that, from what I recall. But it never really struck me as, oh, this is one of the best songs, but it's based on his life.
Now we know.
Mm-hmm. Now I have to look up the backstory on Monty Hall.
So yeah.
It was like, Let's Make a Deal.
Let's make a deal. Yeah. It was a television show, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's Make a Deal. And that's why that's the title. Monty Got a Raw Deal.
Next up, Ignoreland. Very political.
and very, it's the rocker of the album, we can say, even though it's a very acoustic type album, it's probably the rocker in there.
I enjoyed it though.
It's such a good song.
I was kind of like, actually, yeah, I don't like that song doesn't stand out when you think of this album.
No.
But as I was listening to it, I was like, this is great. And I think maybe it is a good break. It's a bit of a dance break, highly political, obviously.
And the yeah part is really like that. That's what I remember the most from the song. And just like that part just different. Like you just like, yeah. Yeah, like you want to shake your fist at the man. I don't know.
So this actually, like, I feel like this is the way they went with their next album, with Monster, more electrical, more of that type of rock song. So it is a good segue into what comes after for their next albums.
Little known fact, that was the first CD that I ever owned was Monster.
Yeah.
I listened to it for months and months until my CDs, the rest of mine came in like from Columbia House. But I got it with my CD player.
I think I still owe Columbia House money.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I do for sure.
So one of the things about this album was after the follow-up to Out of Time, where everybody was expectation, they were going to do a rockier album. So Monster was supposed to be that album.
Okay.
But then some of the songs they started working on were a lot slower, and then this was the result. So I think with having two albums that weren't really rockers, that's where they came out and said, we have to do an electric, full-out album with electric And that's where Monster really became.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Star Me Kitten is next.
I love that song. It's actually low key. I love that song. You want to explain what it's about?
Nope.
Then I'm not going to either, but I like it. I just like, I like the way that it's a playful song and it plays with the audience, and we'll keep it there.
But the star was a reference to
A porn star.
Dialing. Yes. To dial back.
Yeah, yeah.
Call back.
Oh, do you know what I thought it was?
Was it not?
Yeah.
I thought it was because he says fuck me kitten in it, that it just like star, you know, like that it would be expletive or like star number sign. Like, you know what I mean? You wouldn't rap.
I thought it was like that's Star 69. Calling
back. That's the one. They have a song.
They have a song in the next album, Star 69.
Star 69. That's what I was trying to formulate my thoughts around.
So,
Yeah.
That was good. I like that. I low-key like that. I think it's a great song. I won't tell everybody I like it, but I like it.
We won't tell anybody on this podcast.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I guess Man on the Moon is next. But I'd say this and Everybody Hurts. Are there biggest ones except Drive charted more? But I think everyone knows these two songs.
Absolutely.
This charted more than Drive.
Oh, I thought
Drive just charted better in Canada. It all depends on what country, but I'm just going by Canadian charts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So basically this charted at number 3 in Canada. And Drive charted at number 7, and Everybody Hurts charted at number 8 on the Canadian charts.
Mm.
Singles charts.
So he was having trouble coming up with lyrics for this music. Like we talked about, the band writes the music.
Mm-hmm.
Stipe was listening to the track walking around Seattle. I don't know.
Which is a fun thing to do.
On his Walkman cassette player. And then he was just inspired to write about Andy Kaufman, what would you call Andy Kaufman?
Comedian?
Wrestler. I go with wrestler because it ties into my wrestling podcast.
Performance wrestler. Artist.
Yeah.
Because I remember one time, if there's a famous episode of The Dating Game where he just shows up and he's in full, the character that he does a taxi. He's full on taxi and he's in a dating game. And then it's one of the funniest and most uncomfortable episodes ever because he's in character and the woman's asking him and he does it. He's like all strange and stuff.
Uncomfortable is a good term for Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's,
you don't settle into his comedy, you fidget.
Yeah.
But I like Stipe's going into Elvis.
Yeah.
Impression.
Yeah, yeah.
That I love that. And he kind of hams it up more, I think, in concert too. Kind of does the whole stance and everything. It's pretty cool. Because Andy Kaufman goofed on Elvis.
Yeah. I thought everyone would have this Canadian connection, which is like in your face that Jim Carrey plays in Man on the Moon. I thought everyone would have that.
That's a
connection of a connection.
Before I had a connection, I didn't want to go with that easy one. I was looking up Blassie, the wrestler that they reference in here, because there's a book called My Breakfast with Blassie that Andy Kaufman, how does it say it? I'm going to look it up. He does an Elvis impersonation, and I think he is in the film. That's what I want to say. He's in the film My Breakfast with Blassie. He was an old wrestler who I don't know a lot. I didn't go in so much of that story, but I tried to find a Blassie Canadian connection, and I went down this rabbit hole like nowhere yesterday, except to find out that there's a Hulk Hogan. I have to say this because I found it out. Cartoon? Do you remember the name of it, Dave?
No, I forget that.
Yeah. I forget, but James Avery, who is Uncle Phil, was a voice in that cartoon, as was Brad Garrett. Which has nothing to do with anything, but I went down that rabbit hole and found that out.
Lena's rabbit hole of bats.
And then I found other Canadian connections. But yeah, I think at one point Stipe said this should be an instrumental, but they wanted him to write lyrics for it. Maybe it's just
Michael
lazy.
Stipe was lazy. Yeah, absolutely. It was hard work.
That's why they needed him to focus at the time, right? They put over the, this is an important song. You got to do the lyrics properly.
And we love you, Michael Stipe, if you're listening. Like, this is not criticism. We think you're a genius.
Yes. And this is one maybe overplayed. It's not my favorite on the album because it's overplayed, even though it's a...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that brings me to the next one. Night Swimming is my favorite on the album for sure.
Yeah.
I think of this song... Once a month, this song goes through my head.
This is the one that we have a special connection to.
Skinny Dipping.
Aww.
Well, no, not necessarily. So I'll tell you the story, and then we're going to tell you the story.
Can I just lead into it?
Yes.
Night Swimming is the only REM song where the lyric was written before the music. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that this is also my top song by REM.
And mine, well, and mine as well.
Mostly because of our kind of connection to it. But yeah, I guess, yeah. Go ahead, Frank. You going to start?
I'll start. So the song brings us back because we grew up in Sudbury, Ontario. And so what we used to do, there's so many lakes in the area. There's a lake, you can drive 5 minutes in any direction, hit a lake, hit a beach. So it was really hot during the days. So in the evening, we would go for a swim. And it would be with a group of people, 3, 5, 10 minutes, but we would go for a swim. And that's where, you know, Night Swimming came along. Mm-hmm. When we had moved in Calgary and years later, we were here, we found out there was going to be a concert in Vancouver that REM was going to be in. And it was in 2003. So we'd never seen it. So we decided that we're going to go. And it was their greatest hits at the time. So they took requests.
So the album came out in time?
Yeah.
Best of REM?
Yeah.
A play on out of time and now they're in time. Anyway. And yeah. So it was like a greatest hits concert and they were actually taking requests on their website.
Yeah, on their website taking requests. So I said, you know, I looked at the set list and they never played Night Swimming. In any set list. So I said, you know, this is a special song for me. This is where we basically were dating. We got, you know, we really got close in these occasions we were out. We weren't skinny dipping, but but we, you know, at those times it brought back memories of when we were basically
I was skinny dipping, not with Frank.
Yeah.
Or other male people.
Okay. Yeah.
But with my girlfriends, you're totally skinny dipping.
Yeah. We didn't know that or else we'd be in the bushes looking. But let's not get creepy. Let's not get creepy. But so I basically wrote an email. I wrote an email saying, hey, this is, you know, when we got together, we basically started dating. This song was very special to us. Just hope that you would be able to play it. You want to continue on the story? So we went to the concert. I did tell you that I put a request in.
Yeah. So Frank told me that he put the request. I'm like, what are the, like, there's going to be so many people that put in requests and who knows kind of what's going to happen. So we go to see them at Thunderbird Stadium, which is like an outdoor venue in Vancouver. It was, I don't think it exists anymore. Chances are that same weekend, Radiohead played the following night. So wow. We saw REM and Radiohead in back-to-back shows, and the front men of each band played with the other because they're huge fans of each other. That could be a whole podcast.
Are you wanting to keep that played with one another? That's the way you word that?
So
that was a whole different sang? Show.
Yeah.
So Tom York played in that concert. Before we get into it, Tom York played at the concert and he played Ebo. He was backing for Ebo the Letter. And then they asked him, you want to stay on for the next song? And it was The End of the World as We Know It. And he said, yes. And he smiled.
He danced
all over the place during that song. It was great. And then the next night, Michael Stipe performed on Karma Police with Radiohead. So it's because they were big fans of each other.
So we're at the show. It's a great set list because it is like a best of kind of concert, which is really, isn't that what most of us fans are honestly looking for? It's great when the new album comes out, but you're kind of like,
I want to hear a couple of songs.
Like you want an Eras tour. Eras tour of everyone every time you go. But anyway, so we're there. We're kind of waiting, wondering if they're going to do Night Swimming, which was our request. We looked at all the set lists from the previous shows. They had not done it. But then they wheel in this piano. And I turned to Frank and I'm like, that's Night Swimming. Like, they're going to do Night Swimming. I said, and you know, you become friends with the people, at least I do at concerts. I become friends with the people around. I'm like, if it's Night Swimming, like, that's for us. Like, we requested Night Swimming. They're like, oh, we love Night Swimming. We hope it's Night Swimming. He starts out, Michael Stipe, and he says, this is a song for a couple out there. This song meant a lot to them when they were dating.
Oh.
And they traveled a long way to be here for this show. And he tried to find us, but we were outside the light. Like, they shone the light out, but we were just outside of it. And we're lifting up, and everyone around us is pointing at us. Like, this is them. And then the opening chords of Night Swimming. I start crying. Frank's hugging me. Everyone around us is slapping him on the back. Like, it's just like the greatest. Like, it's just his favorite band. This song is so incredible. And at this point, we'd been married 8 years.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Anyways, it was just, it was the greatest musical moment of our lives.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I think, it would be hard to top that musical moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was awesome. for best, you know, when they say best concert, it's like, well, hands down, that was because we were having such a good time. And then that just put over the top. And it was just Mike Mills playing piano and Michael Stipe singing. The rest of the band didn't play, and it was the first time they played that on tour. And then they played it at every other concert after that.
Yeah, because I'm looking at like the Wikipedia page, yeah. And it says how they played it at Austin City Limits.
So yes.
I'm glad you guys provoked them.
You're welcome.
Get it out there.
You're welcome. Yeah. And it is a beautiful song, and a lot of, you know, R.E.M. fans, regular fans, people, when they hear that song, it is an incredible song.
It's such nostalgia. Mm-hmm. It's just like such nostalgia.
I always thought, and this is going to sound really weird because I'm not even a dancer, that someone should do a ballet to this. I could almost picture it in my head.
Oh, yeah.
Which sounds...
You should totally choreograph that.
It's like there's the show. Who is it? The one from This Hour Has 22 Minutes, and she choreographs a Whitney Houston song in Figure Skates. Do you know what I'm talking about?
We just watched that.
Yes. That's like my moment for this song, only I have no idea. Like,
I have nothing.
Yes.
I have nothing.
And I forget her name.
Choreographed the whole figure skating routine.
Yeah. Yes. I've always pictured.
She did the Baroness sketch show. Did she also do 22 Minutes?
Oh, maybe. I'm getting mixed up. It's not 22 Minutes. It's the Baroness. Yeah.
But her stand-up was about this skating routine she had in her mind, and she did it as a stand-up, and then eventually she did it for real, right? So,
Carolyn Taylor.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hilarious.
Oh,
I loved it. There was
another lady from Baroness Von Sketch that was on This Hour Has 22 Minutes. That's why I'm, And then last song, Find the River.
It's a good closer. I love that song. It's just Michael Stipe just singing.
I read that
it's beautiful.
That Bill Berry and Mike Mills, they both wrote parts without listening to each other and kind of came together to see kind of what happened. And if that's true, it worked. If it's not true, it still worked.
Like those two last ones are such a good vocal performance from Michael Stipe that they just go together so well.
I also really like the term bergamot and vetiver. And I looked that up. That is a combination in the scent world.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know. I just looked it up.
So one other thing. So Drive, I don't know if you've ever seen R.E.M. live, but Drive, when they do it live, most times they do it as a fast version.
Oh.
Almost a little bit like a little punk to it. And it's actually kind of neat to actually listen to them. So if you get a chance to see a live version of it, take a look, because it's a faster song. You know, it's not as good as I would say as atmospheric and stuff, but it's kind of different. You kind of enjoy that song because they make it a little bit faster.
I mean, Drive sounds like it should be a faster song.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's the title.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to have to look that up because it was my favorite song off the CD.
Yeah.
You can see that. So that brings us, what are we going to put on our...
Well, first off, I'll tell you, it did chart in Canada. The album charted at number 4 in Canada for Canadian top albums/CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And it went 7 times platinum, which is 700 albums sold in Canada. Mm-hmm. It went other places, like United States was 4 times platinum, but that's like 3.5 million albums sold. So,
am I allowed to talk about Rolling Stone, even though it's not Canadian?
Yeah.
So, this album was ranked 247 in Rolling Stone's 500 greatest albums of all time. And then when they rebooted, I forget what year, but when they rebooted the list in 2012, it was 249. And then in 2020, they rebooted the list and it was 96.
That's a big jump.
So that's like, shows you kind of, the staying power of the album. Because you don't always know, you love an album at the time, it's in that moment in time, but then you kind of don't know how it's going to hold up. But I think this album clearly does. Yeah,
I think that you are right. That album does hold up still.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to talk how in 1987, Rolling Stone called them the best band in America, which I think this was even before this, but I agree. Just like...
They're very influential. Like a lot of people talk about, like including Radiohead, talk about R.E.M. as being an influence on them. So if you like a band today and you don't like R.E.M., they probably influence your favorite band.
Yeah.
But they were, you know, they started out in 1980 and like this was 1992 and At A Time was 1990 and Green was 1989. Those were the bands that kind of, those were the albums that kind of made them famous, but they were such an underground band. They were a college radio band. They toured colleges. So they had a big groundswell of support all around the Southern United States because they were that underground band. Like, you know, you think of bands like the Pixies and different bands like that. That was them at the time. They were that big band, underground band that everybody wanted to see. And then they finally...
And then Losing My Religion happened.
Yeah. And they became... Well, they started to get, you know... This one goes out to the one I love, was kind of one of their big ones. Ahead. And then with Green, they had Stand, obviously, and some of the other songs on that album, which were just kind of... It was just kind of a silly album that they put on. And then they got signed by a major label. And then that's where they had to... kind of had to change because all of a sudden the money started to get really real. And then that's when they came out with Losing My Religion. And they
great album.
I just feel in my life, they've been always kind of around. Mm-hmm. Even if I didn't know a lot of their songs when I was younger, like I knew of them and knew they were big, if that makes sense. They've always just kind of been around. And then I had friends who introduced me. They had older siblings, but I always just knew who they were, even without naming songs, if that makes sense. And I probably had heard songs, but
good. I like that you're bragging that you had friends.
I did back then. Yeah, but what song are we going to put on our playlist?
Oh, what song do you guys think we should put on the playlist?
That's what I was going to ask you to pour. I mean, for me, it's Night Swimming.
Yeah, I think you have to do that.
Okay. I think that's three against one drive. Yeah. Right now you're thinking, so I don't want to just tell
like everybody,
you what
everybody hurts. Like you want people to hear it, drive as well. But I think to leave out Night Swimming would just be, so that's, sorry, Avery, that one's skull.
No, I'm fine with having Night Swimming on there.
Drive is pretty
It's not always
too.
About having the biggest song off the album on the playlist.
Because people listen, people know that. That's on the radio all the time, so.
Also, I love Drive. Like, it's one of my favorite R.E.M. songs, but it is the first song of the album. So that's, you know, when you start the album, that's the one you hear, right?
Yeah.
Any closing remarks?
I think I said everything that I wanted to say. I'm like checking things off. Check.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, I have a question because I asked this to everybody and we sort of alluded to it earlier. Do you both have Columbia House 10 CDs for a penny?
Oh, yeah.
And
I feel like I was the tapes too, though, cassette tape.
I had tapes and then it went to CDs. Yeah.
I did not know it had tapes.
Oh, you didn't? I had Whitney Houston based on that because my sister and I, we were in together. We shared.
In Kahoot.
Did I mention Split Ends and also Crowded House? Yeah.
So I like Lena's question that she asked last week was, what album were you stuck with Columbia House that you didn't want?
That you didn't return and you didn't cancel?
I think it was, and I wasn't a big fan of her at the time. They sent me Whitney Houston's first album, and I didn't.
The one that I bought when I was like 8 years old.
But I, you know, like, yeah, because you're always like, yeah, they send you a Whitney Houston, and they would, and I think that's the one I got stuck. Not now, looking back, like, yeah, she had, you know, like, I was a young teenager, you know.
I get that.
I was like a young girl.
I feel like it was like a Paul McCartney or a Traveling Wilburys or something that you got that you're like, oh, and then like actually is great because you're going to listen to it. Obviously, you paid at that time $24 for it or something.
I had Sinead O'Connor, I think it was called The Emperor's New Clothes. That was one that just, I don't want to say stuck with, but that I didn't mean and I didn't return it, but I didn't listen to it often, but I wish I had.
Yeah, it was good. That was good. Yeah.
You?
I don't know what album I got reluctantly.
Well, okay.
But.
So what are we doing next week?
We are going to do something completely different that's not anything like R.E.M. It's going to be Kid Rock. Devil Without a Cause.
So just a heads up. I'm glad I did this one. No, I'm not a Kid Rock fan, but
I don't think I am. But we'll find out when we do the album.
I don't know what else is on this song or a CD. I just know that there's one song on it, and just like we're gonna dive into douchebag rock for a week. So. Right.
I just want to
hear you say that in one sentence.
Then you can go night swimming and wash off the douchebag.
Yes. We will feel dirty after that.
Guilty pleasure, yeah.
Yes. All right, thanks for listening. Fun.